ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनापतितमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति. So we're in chapter 7, Panchadashi, verse 2-11. Yatra yadrishyate drashtra, yatra yadrishyate drashtra, jagrat swapna susuptishu, jagrat swapna susuptishu, tatraiva tannetaratreti, tatraiva tannetaratreti, anubhutirahisammata, anubhutirahisammata. Yatra, yet, drishyate, drashtra, jagrat swapna susuptishu, tatra eva tat na itaratra iti anubhutihi hi sammata. This verse now, from this whole section that we're going to be going into, is now kind of an explanation of anvaya vyatireka, which was introduced in the previous verse. So let me just review for a minute what anvaya vyatireka is. It's a prakriya, it's a teaching methodology. It's a logic that is really goes through so many of the prakriyas that we use, the different unfoldments that we use in Vedanta. So this is anvaya vyatireka. Anvaya is the positive assertion. When this is, that is. That's the anvaya. When this thing is, that thing is. Like, for instance, when the sun is up, the day is. When the sun is, the day is. That's the anvaya. The vyatireka is the negative assertion. When this is not, that is not. Right? So if in it, when you're trying to do a viveka, a discernment between two things, the dependency, the relationship of one thing to another, we would say that there's a definite relationship. If you can say when this is, that is not. And then when this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. Right? Then we'd say that's a relationship. But what if you were to say, so that's the anvaya vyatireka, the positive and negative both hold. So it's a logic, right? When this thing is, that is. When it's not, then that is not. Now what about when the anvaya vyatireka doesn't work? Like for instance, if you say, when this is, that is. You can say, oh, maybe, you know, there's a dependent relationship there. When this is, that is. But then you can say, but when this is not, that still is. The vyatireka breaks down. Right? So when this is, that is. But when this is not, that still is. If that's the situation, then there's no dependency. Because even though you may have mistaken, you may have felt there was a relationship or a dependency, there can't be, because when the one thing goes, the other still is. Right? So this anvaya vyatireka, this little logic, is really used to discern the nature of yourself, who you actually are, to discern it, to differentiate it from your experiences. Because you have to be able to discern, in just in your experience as a human being, as a person, to discover who am I really, you know, and you would have to say, like say if I say, I am my thought, the self, the atma, the self is the thought, for instance. I would have to say it like this, when the thought is, I am. And that's true. You can't have a thought that's away from yourself, right? If you have a thought, then you're definitely there, for sure. So the anvaya is good, when the thought is, I am. But then what about the vyatireka? When the thought is not, I am not? That doesn't hold. Because actually, when the thought is not, I still am. What about when the emotion is? You know, when the anger is, I am definitely there. when the anger passes, I'm still there. That's the Vyatireka breaks down. If the Vyatireka breaks down, then there can't really be a relationship. The anger or the emotion or the thought or the perception or the experience can't be intrinsically belong to me because I can be without it. And so when we do, if even in the Drik Drisha Viveka, the seer seeing, even though that's a little bit different, it's a different prakriya in a sense, but it's the same, to look at it, it gets down to some of the same understandings. If I can look at something and describe it, have a subject-object relationship with it, then I can't be that thing. Why? Because I'm perceiving it. I'm not what I'm perceiving, I'm the perceiver, right? What I'm perceiving is something that I've objectified and I can watch it change and it can come and go. This is the nature of the thoughts. And so now, if that's so, if I have a subject-object relationship with it, I'm perceiving it, I'm watching it change, it comes into perception, goes out of perception, comes into experience, comes out of perception, then the relationship, there's a relationship there, there's not an identity, let's put it that way. I have to discover what is that relationship. Like I would have to discover in reference to my thoughts, what is the relationship between myself and the thoughts that come and go. This, what's so interesting is that this type of thinking doesn't usually even occur because I just immediately, since I am present to every thought I have, to every emotion that I have, to every experience that I have, there is no real reason for my mind to make that differentiation. You know, this thought is, now I am angry, now I am happy, now I am sad, now I am tired, now I am whatever the experience is. I don't necessarily stop and think, well, wait a minute. I am here as a constant being that is present to all of these negating experiences. Each experience negates another, right? So this Anvaya Vyatireka is a teaching methodology that's used to help a person discern the constant from the changing, the subject from the object, all of this type of thing. So the Anvaya Vyatireka is, so this is usually often associated with the prakriya, a prakriya teaching methodology that has to do with discerning myself, differentiating myself from the waking, dream, and deep sleep states. Okay. So that's what we're going to be looking at here. We can use this Anvaya Vyatireka in reference to any experience that I'm having to differentiate my being from the experience that comes and goes. That's Anvaya Vyatireka. If when the experience goes, I go, I'm the experience then. It's very interesting that not all of the experiences go, but I don't. I'm here before, during, and after every experience. So that is a beautiful setup, you know, for, it's a beautiful situation, in which my mind can discern and differentiate the constant from the changing. Right? Because I end up as the constant. The subject is the constant. What is objectified is the changing. And then we look at what is the relationship between this changing and the subject. Now, that's a different matter. And that's a very important matter, to look at the relationship between what is changing, the changing experiences, and me. But first, we have to recognize there's a relationship and not just an identity. Mm-hmm. I always take myself to be the experience. Like, say, if I say, I am angry. The I and the anger are one and the same being. I am angry. It's not that I am and the experience of anger is there. Right? So the viveka is the differentiating from myself, the constant, the one who lights up the experience, from the changing experience. So this Anvaya Vyatireka now is a really powerful methodology for this. So here he's going to explain this in these next few verses. It says, yatra, where, goes like this, in the jagrat swapna sushupti, jagrat means the waking state, swapna the dream state, sushupti, the deep sleep state. So in these three states, so in the shu is the locative plural. So Jagrat Swapna Sushuptishu, in the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, okay, there, that which is seen, okay, that which is seen by the seer, Drashtra means by the seer. So that which is seen there in the waking, dream, and deep sleep states, Tatra eva tat na itaratra iti anubhutihi I samhata. He says, that which is seen by the seer in the waking, dream, and deep sleep states, that is seen there alone, in one of them alone, not in the others. So that is seen there alone, not itaretra, not in the others. Then I'll explain this in a minute. Then he says, anubhutihi hi sammata. This experience we have all the time, it's something that is accepted by all people. So let me tell you what's accepted. In the waking state, this is the waking state means I have this physical body, I have my sense organs that are perceiving this world. So the world I perceive, I'm awake to this world, my mind is awake to this world and perceiving it through the sense organs. That's what we mean by the waking state. So in the waking state, I am having a set of experiences here. Like we can just talk about this experience of being in this room together. It's a waking state experience, right? But we have this experience, this day, you know, in this waking state. As opposed to now, when I move, I go to bed at night and I go to sleep and I go into the dream state. In the dream state, I have another world with another set of experiences, with a dream body, dream thoughts, dream relationship, dream world. Okay? The experiences that I have in the dream world stay in the dream world. The experiences that I have in the waking world stay in the waking world. They don't cross over. See what I mean? Now, they're going to use a little bit later, they'll use another example, but like this. If I have a big meal, if I have a big meal in the waking state, when I could go to the dream state, I can find myself being very hungry. Or, if I'm in the dream state and I've had a big meal, I can wake up and be hungry. Right? The two worlds don't overlap. Right? So the idea is this. What I'm experiencing in the waking state, I have this body and these relationships. In the dream state, I take on another body and have other relationships. I don't bring the dream body back into this world or take this physical body into the dream world. So the experiences of the waking state, including the waker, this body, mind, sense organs, and the waking experiences, stay in the waking state. And the experiences in the dream state stay in the dream state, including the dream body, right? Dream experiences, dream perception, all of it, dream world. They stay in the dream state. Now, also, in the deep sleep state, there is no waking experience or dream experience. In the deep sleep state, there's just a big I don't know, right? And so all that's being said here is just bringing this fact to light. That's all he's saying, because in Panchadashi, we need many verses to get to, you know, he uses more than one verses to get to the idea. So here the idea is this. We all know this. Like if I tell you, you don't take your waking body into the dream, or you don't take the dream into the waking. Everybody knows what I mean. So these three states, waking, dream, deep sleep state, negate each other. So what is seen by the drashta, the seer, in one state, right, stays there. It's very interesting because then as he'll unfold this, the karma pala, the fruits of your actions, the punya and the papa, the positive and negative results of your actions that are being experienced in the waking state are not carried over into the dream state are not carried over into the deep sleep state. They belong within the sphere that they're being experienced. Right? So now, of course, where are we going to be going with this? The experiences that the drashta, the seer, has in the waking state, which includes the body, the mind, the sense organs, and the perception, what you normally take to be yourself, those experiences, including the seer, right, the enjoyer, are not carried over into the dream, let alone into the deep sleep. There's no mind, body, sense organs manifest in the deep sleep state. And yet, you are in all three. In other words, you will say, and everybody will say, and they won't really think about what they're saying actually, but I am the waker. It was my dream. It was my deep sleep. So I, the waker, had a dream and went into deep sleep. That means I was present in all three states of experience. Right? And who was present? Who was present? Because it's not the body, it's not anything that you take to be yourself that was present. Right? So in your experience, the body, in the dream state, this body was not there. These relationships were not there. This mind was not there. This ahankara, this ego was not here, the one that's identified with the body. All of those things were not there. But I was still there in the dream state. So who is that? Who is that I that has what we call an anuvritti? There's no change. There's no loss. There's no sense of separation from self in these three experiences. And in fact, we've all had the experience of waking up from a dream. When you wake up from a dream and the whole dream world has vanished, and the dream character has vanished, nothing has happened to me at all. The whole universe, the whole dream universe has vanished. Everything that was happening, it could have been a very intense experience. But is there a death experience for me? Not at all. Not a whiff of a death experience. Not a whiff of a change. Even though the whole world has blown up in my face. You know? So this experience, just if we analyze this experience, it makes you want to do further inquiry to recognize who is it that's really here. Okay? So let's go on, because he's going to do a lot of further inquiry. So, sayat tatraikshate kinchit, sayat tatraikshate kinchit, tenanan bhagato bhavet, tenanan bhagato bhavet, trishtvaiva punyam papam cha, trishtvaiva punyam papam cha, ityevam shrutishu dindimaha, ityevam shrutishu dindimaha. Says, sa yat tatra ikshate kinchit, tena ananvagataha bhavet, trishtva eva punyam papam cha, iti evam shrutishu dindimaha. You know, in the Vedanta, what is revealed in the Vedanta, in the Upanishad, should, for knowledge to take place, there's three factors, there's three things that should come into line for you. One is your anubhava, your experience. It should, what is unfolded by the Vedanta should be true to your experience, that anubhava. Here in this verse that we just did, this is your experience. When I'm talking about the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, and I'm describing that, everybody can go, yes, I understand what you mean. You can say, yes, I understand what you mean, because they're looking at their own experience and saying, yes, I can relate to that. That's anubhava, okay? Then it should also be true to what exactly is the shruti. Now we're talking, I'm talking about deep dream, the deep sleep, the dream state, the waking state, is our experience. But the shruti also is talking about this. The difference between the fact that the waking, dream, and deep sleep experience negate each other, but I am there in all three. So this particular phenomena is something that is dealt with by the shruti. And so what he's doing now, after first reminding you of your own experience, now he's giving some quotes from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad that actually talk about this anubhava-vyatireka, right? So this is the shruti. So he says, from the Brihadaranyaka, it's just a phrase from one of the verses in the Brihadaranyaka. Sa yet tetra ikshate kinchit. He says, that which is seen there, kinchit means anything that is seen there, means like in the dream state, tena aninvagataha bhavet, that does not follow him, right? That doesn't follow him. Whatever is seen there, that thing doesn't come with him, okay? When he goes into another, one of the three states. Whatever is experienced there, that doesn't come with him into the next state. Then he says that the Upanishad goes on in another section in the same area. Drishtva eva punyam papam cha. He says, and having experienced the punya and the papa there, that punya and papa, that itself doesn't come with him, right? So whatever is seen in the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, all of those experiences, all of those things that are experienced, the punya and the papa. Now, what is punya and papa? We would say in this waking state, the punya. How do we know what would something be punya? Punya are those events that bring about sukha, that bring about happiness. Papa are those events that bring about sorrow, as though they're meant to cause you sorrow. Punya, they're meant to be pleasurable experiences for you. So you know in yourself, if you look at your life, there's some experiences that you have that are pleasing and pleasurable. You can relax, you can have fun, you can be grateful for those experiences. And then there's other experiences that we can view as learning experiences. The papa, they're not fun, they're painful. And the very nature of the experience is meant to cause pain, like for the sense of the death of a dear one, or the loss of a job, or your sickness, or things that are just not meant to be fun. Those are the papa. So now what he's saying, the Brihadaranyaka is saying, this punya and papa that's experienced, they're experienced, but they are left in the realm in which they're being experienced. What is the point? The point is that when we get to the sakshi, the nature of the witness, the one who is present to the dream, present to the waking, present to the deep sleep, that person, that being, is free of the punya and papa, right? It's free of the karmas that I am accruing in those states of experience. Because when we think of it as a jiva, we're thinking about the transmigration of the jiva, right? Birth after birth after birth. And myself carrying as a jiva, carrying all of the results of my action, all of my punya, all of my good, my meritorious acts that will allow me to reap positive rewards, and the adharmas that I've done that create painful experiences. This is true in every culture, you know, even if you don't believe in the reincarnation, the transmigration of the jiva, of the soul. You have heaven and hell, right? Heaven is punya, hell is papa. Purgatory is a temporary papa, right? That's what it is. And so we have in most religions of the world, you have this idea of reaping the results of your actions. And it's a reaping the results of your actions. It's two-tiered. One is what we call drishtapala, where we have an immediately reaping the results of our actions on a physical level. Like you do an act and you reap the results of it. You know, if you're a robber and you were to rob a bank, then you are reaping the results. Either you get away with it and you get a bunch of money and then you go and spend it, you know, or you're caught in the process. But it's all on a physical level. You're reaping the results of your physical action. That's called drishta. Drishta means that which is seen. So drishta polas, you know. And you can on a drishta on just on this physical level, you can also your drishta polas can give pleasure and give pain. But there's another level that we call adrishta. And the adrishta, that the unseen results, that's the moral order. You know, sometimes they'll translate it as that the adrishta pola is the moral order. The results that you will reap later that will cause you to take your next birth, which will be comprised of punya and papa. Events that will produce pain, events that will produce pleasure. And say in Christianity, they would have that moral order would be your actions that you're not paying for them now, but that moral order is what takes you to heaven or hell. So the moral order in the East has more to do with what causes you to take a good birth or a bad birth, or a birth that is much more easy, much more pleasurable, or a birth that is filled with pain. And they say in a physical birth, when you take whether it's a good birth or a bad birth, whatever birth it may be, that's one more punya or more or less punya or papa. But no matter what the birth is, there's going to be the exhaustion, 50% punya, 50% papa. So nobody on this plane has an easy ride. It's always, you know, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. In fact, sometimes when Swamiji's teaching, he'll do just that. This is what we call samsara. Sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, dukkha 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 sukha. Go like that, right? And everybody knows it's not just sukha. It's not just dukkha. You know, you'll say, well, I have had a few little bleeps of sukha at least. But they say, really, 50-50. So, now, in the East, anyway, for somebody who holds this, and I would say it's also in the West, I take myself to be, my being, who I am, to be the Karta Bhokta. Karta means the one who is doing these acts and therefore reaping the results. I am the doer of the acts. Right? That's the karta, the doer. And I reap the results on both drishta, on a physical level, and adrishta, on a subtle level. I reap the results of these acts. So now, when we do this anvaya vyatireka, and we're looking at this life in terms of all of my experience, the waking experience, the dream experience, and the deep sleep experience. What we're looking at is the one, the me, that is there present to each one of these three states of experience, the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state. Am I a karta bhokta? Is the sakshi, the witness, the self that is present in all three states, a doer and an enjoyer? Right? So now what he's saying is, you know what? And Brihadaranyaka Upanishad here is saying, the one who does the act is contained in that state of experience. And the one who reaps the result is contained in that state of experience. Right? In other words, the waker, right, who does the act is reaping the results of the act. It is that jiva that is reaping the results of the act. If I go into the dream state, the dream character who is doing the act is reaping the results of the act. If I go into the deep sleep state, there is no karta bhokta there. Right? In the deep sleep state, There is no doer or enjoyer, right? And so now if I hold these three states up side by side, what is the nature of the me who is the self of all three? Right? Do you see what I mean? Who am I? The one who is present to the waking state, who is present to the dream state, who is present to the deep sleep state. And is that one a karta bhokta? Remember, some of you are kind of new to this Panchadashi, but in the last 10 verses or so, the whole analysis has been on who is the doer enjoyer. What is the nature of the enjoyer? Now he's going into this Anvaya Vyatireka to try to make you recognize that, in fact, the Kutastha Atma, the self, the Sakshi, is actually free of doership and enjoyership, and by using this Anvaya Vyatireka. Before we go to this next verse, which is going to continue with this, let me just take you through the Anvaya Vyatireka in reference to the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, how they do it, how they apply it. Let me say it like this. When the waking state is the state, I am. It means I am present to the waking state. So the waking state is I am. When the waking state is not, because it's been replaced by the dream state, right? So now the waking state, which is not the dream state, is I still am, right? So I'd say the waking state is I am. The waking state is not, because the dream state has come, I still am. So we've got the Anvaya. The waking state is the dream state. The waking state is I am. But the dream state is I am. The dream state has replaced the waking state. Do you see that? The waking state is I am. The dream state is I am. The deep sleep state is, I am. The waking state is, I am. Dream state is, I am. Deep sleep state is, I am. The waking state negates the dream state, which negates the deep sleep state. You can't have all three of these experiences at once. Waking body is negated by dream body, is negated by no body, right? Waking identity is negated by dream identity, is negated by deep sleep. These three states negate each other. But I am the self of all three. So if I am the self of all three, and the three states of experience negate each other, who am I? Right? Who am I? Because I can't be this waking body, or this waking sense organs, or waking mind, or waking emotions, or waking ahankara, because I am perfectly comfortable, the same me is perfectly comfortable in the dream state with a different body, with different sense organs, different mind, different experience, different universe. And that same me is very comfortable in the deep sleep, which is really astounding if you think about it. As Swamiji goes on, so much, right? Creating the conditions for you. Because we don't really think about it, how much we, what it means that we love our sleep, that we love to have a comfortable bed and comforters and pillows and all of this type of thing. And how much we enjoy snuggling up into our pillows so that we can lie back and blot out the entirety of our experience, including the body, the mind, even the ahankar, the I thought. You blot out the totality of your experience, including the one who says, I am having an experience. You don't even want that. You know? You don't even mind not having the awake mind there saying, oh, look, I'm deep sleeping. Isn't this wonderful? You think, you know? You think you would want that, you know, to have somebody commenting on it. Because we're used to commenting. We're used to, even in the dream, you have a sense that something's going on and I'm still present. Right? Well, in the deep sleep, there's nothing going on. There's nobody commenting on your presence. You know, I'm here, deep sleeping. This is wonderful. No, whole thing is totally blocked out. And you love it. You know? Even to the point, and you don't think about what you're doing. Even to the point that when the alarm goes off in the morning, you'll put it off for snooze control. Even they make alarm clocks with snooze control. You know? So that, again, you know, that around the world, you know?
That's universal.
Yeah. So that you can sleep, go, just go back for another few minutes, just go back into to what? Pure being. In that deep sleep, there is no kartritvam. There's no doership. There's no enjoyership. There's no ahankar. There's no I notion. There's no running commentary. And you know what? That's just the way I like it. There is only me. We don't think about this. We don't think about it. But you know what? That is the fact. And then you'll wake up and then you'll say, oh, wow, that was so wonderful. I had such a good sleep last night. I slept so deeply. Yeah? What was going on when you were sleeping? Nothing. I have no idea. I have no idea. And you say that with such happiness, you know? But now, really, when we're, it's important to look at these experiences, because there is someone there, me, who is not a doer, who is not an enjoyer, but it's just me, the me that is not doing anything, the me that is whole and complete, the me that wants nothing. In fact, that me is so manifest, so obvious in deep sleep, because that's such an enjoyable state and there's nothing else going on, you know. So in the waking state and the dream state, where there's all kinds of thoughts and perceptions and agitations and emotions, there's all kinds of things going on, my own presence is, in a sense, in competition from the standpoint of the mind with all of this phenomena that is going on. So this stable presence of me is absolutely taken for granted, and the focus is on all of the phenomena, all of the moods, all of the emotions, all of the activity, the ahankar, the buddhi, the mind, in fact, gets lost in all of that, totally taking for granted and identifying my own presence with all of that changing phenomena. And so now, with something like Anvaya Vyatireka and these teaching methodologies, we're trying to help the mind to recognize the stability of me, of my presence as the sakshi, as the pure witness, the pure conscious being, which is myself, that is there present amidst the waking state phenomena, the dream state phenomena, is all of the changing experiences that we have. All of those changing experiences are taking place in my presence, but I am what we call asanga. Asanga means I am unattached. These things take place and I remain the same. But the mind has to be pointed out to the mind, because the mind doesn't notice it. Doesn't notice I remain the same, because it's so busy focusing on all of the activity, all of the change. So it will say, and then you can start listening to your language. Oh, look at, my mind is changing. I'm changing all of the time. My mind is changing. Well, of course, you're aware of all of these changes that are going on, and you're talking about all of these changes, but we don't usually differentiate myself, me, the one who's lighting up all of these changes and who's actually untouched by them. So this Anvaya Vyatireka is a teaching, powerful teaching methodology to help you see that. Now, in this verse 2:10 that we did last week, he gives the whole thing away in that verse and then is building on it. He says in that verse, he says, for the one who is discerning, who's doing the discernment, trying to understand, trying to differentiate The truth of the enjoyer, the bhoktritattvam, the one who's trying to differentiate the truth of the enjoyer in the waking dream and deep sleep state. So that's us. That's a student now. The teacher is trying to make you see it. So for the student who's now trying to differentiate the truth of who am I? Who is this enjoyer? The one who's having all of these experiences. So what's the truth of this enjoyer? In the waking state, in the deep, in the dream state, in the deep sleep state, he says, through this teaching methodology called Anvaya Vyatireka, that truth of the enjoyer, of me, the one who's having all of these experiences, is discerned, is clearly seen, nischya. It's clearly seen to be the sakshi. Means the conscious being, just the sat-chit, the conscious me, that lights it all up. That sakshi is the kutastha, is the stable one, you know. That sakshi is the one who lights up the experience, is the ultimate innermost subject of all of the experiences that I'm having, you know. Just like if I'm aware of you, you're in my line of vision, right? If you're in my line of vision, you could all, you know, be moving about. But the line of vision, the sakshi, is not moving, right? The one who's perceiving is not moving. The one who's lighting up the perception is not moving, right? The one who's lighting up the perception is other than the perception. And so the movement of the perception, right, is not the movement of the one who's lighting up the perception. And so here, if you look at your own inner experience, like if we do, for instance, when you're contemplating, if you're just sitting still, and you're noticing all of the thoughts and moods and emotions and images that are taking place in your mind, just letting your mind be without bothering, don't worry about it, you're just simply letting your mind be. So now there's all the activity going on in your mind, the thought flow, etc. But there's something else. There's me, the one because of whom this thought flow is known. Because I'm aware of the thought flow. So now I can differentiate the awareness, the me, the subject, from the changing thought flow object. This is something that's not usually done. If I do that, though, what I discover is that there is a stable presence, that in fact the consciousness that the thought flow is enjoying, every thought that you have is conscious, right? And of course, every thought I have is conscious. So we can say the consciousness is the very self, the very content, the very truth of the thought. But what has to be discerned is that truth of the thought, that consciousness, which is me, right, doesn't come and go, and the thought does. Right? That's a very interesting relationship. You can't remove the thought from consciousness. Later, where is it? You can't separate the thought from consciousness. But at the same time, there's a difference between the thought and consciousness. And the difference is this. That the consciousness never changes and the thought does. The mood does. The emotion does. The perception does. The universe does. Everything that you experience is coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. But the being, the conscious being, in which all of this experience is taking place and which can't really be removed from the experience, that isn't coming and going. It's a fact. And this fact has got to be noticed. Because if that fact isn't noticed, then you have identified yourself with what is coming and going. See what I mean? It makes no sense. You identify yourself with what is coming and going, and then you suffer. And that's samsara. This is what we call ajnanam. This is the samsara. The solution is actually very, very simple, but it's simple only when it's pointed out. You know? Until it's pointed out, instead of there being, you know, that recognition, that viveka, that discrimination, that I am the stable being who is present to all of this experience, There's just identification. I am my experience. Right? I am my body. If I am my body, then when my body is born, I am born. When my body dies, I die. I am my mind. That means whatever my mind is doing, that's who I am at the moment. There's no discernment of me, the one who is present to all of the experiences. And once the mind makes that discernment, the mind then has a home. The mind has a self. Until then, the mind doesn't have a self. The mind is the self. The body doesn't have a self. The body is the self. And so your self takes on all of these attributes that don't belong to it, and then suffers those attributes. Takes on all of the qualities, it takes on the object itself, and then suffers the nature of the nature of the objects that you've identified with. So all of these prakriyas, and Vaya Vyatireka being a very important one, right, are used to bring this to light, bring this knowledge to light, to bring yourself to light, kind of out of the darkness of ignorance. Once it's brought to light, it's the most obvious thing in the world. If you wonder, how could I have not seen that? How could I not recognize that? How could I not appreciate the changelessness of my own being? It's a wonder. But it's also very understandable, because the changelessness of your own being is never not there. So whatever thought is there has for itself that changelessness. And because of that, that changeless being of you is totally taken for granted, because it's invariable. There's no place where it is not. And so therefore, all that's focused on is the changing phenomenon. You don't recognize the changelessness of your own presence. But in that recognition, there's such incredible freedom, because you can't hurt yourself. Right? And so your mind becomes, it gains a stable home. So, okay, why don't we stop there? Do more next week. Stick it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. You found a new place, that's good. So, little cave. That's okay, Tiff.
You know, if there were an absence of being, then it would be easier to notice. I mean, if there was someone there that could notice.
You could contrast.
Huh?
Yeah, there'd be a contrast, but there's never an absence of being.
Yeah.
There's never an absolute, huh?
Who would notice the
absolute? Yeah.
No, that's not the question. Yeah. But, you know, but all the other, experience, everything else, you notice it's coming and going. And
that's right. And all coming and going has that for its substrate being, you know? Mm-hmm. You. That's why it's totally taken for granted. Yourself is totally taken for granted, because it's never not there.
And so the idea never fluctuates.
And so there's no question, even the thought doesn't occur to differentiate it, because you only notice, it's as though that, which is true, that is the very substance of all of the changing You know, so all you're noticing is the changing, and you don't differentiate the changing from the changeless, or the subject from the object. But also, that's why all of these obvious things become what we call prakriyas, teaching methodologies. You know, even to differentiate subject to object, to say a simple thing like, you know, I can't be what I'm looking at. I can't, if I say, how, if I can't be something, I'm looking at something, it comes and goes, I can't be that. That's kind of a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. But we don't think about it in terms of my own inner self-experience. Because it's the mind, the mind itself, it's the Atma, yourself is not talking. It's not saying, hey, wait a minute, you're making a mistake here. It's just pure me, my presence, pure being. The mind is the one that has the ignorance. And the mind is the one that is never away from consciousness. It's never away from being. Like that's its very self. Right? And so since it's never away, why shouldn't the mind just say, I am the conscious being? So the mind, which has all of these different thoughts and feelings and problems and complexes and, you know, sorrows and whatnot, it says, I am the conscious being and now I am sorrowful. Mm-hmm. Right? Or I am angry or I am agitated. Because it hasn't recognized the fact that I am present to all of those negating emotions. I'm not always sorrowful. The same I that was sorrowful is now happy. Right? But the sorrowfulness and the happiness negate each other. But there, so who's the Sakshi there that was present to both? Mm-hmm. So that one's not attached to either. It's a Sangha. Well, a Sangha means not attached. If, you know, if these thoughts can negate each other and I'm still there, the one who is happy is the one who is sad, then I can't be the one. Right? So I have to be able to discern me. You know, and not just blind, kind of, we're born into this blind state of the taking for grantedness that I am just these, I'm now this, and then I'm this, and then I'm this, and then I'm this.
Well, it's only natural to see that change, notice change.
Right, because everything is changing, and the mind is always lit up.
Yeah.
So its nature is to, the nature of the mind is to be conscious. It just doesn't recognize the difference between the stability of the consciousness and the changingness, the satyam mitya, really the changingness of itself. Right? So it's such an incredible discernment to make, because then there's, I mean, then the whole Vedanta is based on that, really. Because if you recognize the self, changelessness of the self, then there's nothing to contain that self. That self, just like that you recognize the changelessness of yourself, then it's free of the body, it's free of the mind, it's free of the sense organs, it's free of the thoughts. Then what's to make that self different between myself different from yourself? Right? Mm-hmm. Or different from Ishvara? So there's so much that comes out of that understanding.
Mm-hmm. Right? There's something that I always find interesting, the self-experience, and that we all have the experience of being completely comfortable going, kind of transmigrating, so to speak, through all these different states. You're like, oh yeah, I'm perfectly comfortable in deep sleep. I'm perfectly comfortable in a completely unmanifest space. And then suddenly the mind comes in and is like, I'm what? Yeah. You know? And there's that sort of, it's a very anxiety sort of ridden place, like suddenly you were in deep sleep and somebody turned the lights on and you're like, oh my God. But it's so interesting that the dynamic between the two, that one that's completely at ease and like, oh, of course, and the mind that comes in and is like, that seems like such a dangerous place to be.
Well, yeah, it's... We are so comfortable with that transition from waking, dream, deep sleep. And then when you think of it, another way of saying this, when you think of it, it's so incredible.
Yeah, like so radical.
It's so radical. But you know what? We don't think about it as radical. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it,
we don't experience it as radical.
No, because it's absolutely natural. It's natural to to who we are, and the self is not changing. You know, the self doesn't go through any type of modification to worry about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very natural. But when you think about it, even this, I like this one. You can have a dream. You're having a dream, a very real, say, very numinous dream. It's a great dream. And in that dream, oh, now Tibby.
Tibby.
I just pulled her clothes off. Yes, if you notice, I've done some patchwork there. Do you see that? Yeah. that was actually from Lola, not Tibby.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that one.
What was I saying? I lost my thought. Oh, yeah. So if you have a dream, you can be in the dream, you can be a character in the dream, and then the dream can change and you can have no character in the dream at all. No identity. You're just the whole. That's Ishvara. And you don't notice. There's no problem for you from going to having a body in the dream to having no body in the dream. To just being the whole, right? So in the Vedanta, really the vision of the Vedanta is this whole creation, actually, is this Ishvara, is myself. Right? The whole universe comes from me, is sustained by me, and then resolves into me from the standpoint of just the conscious being. And then you can say, well, I can't imagine being the whole. I can only imagine being the jiva, you know? But actually, in the dream state, you don't have any problem. You're as comfortable, right? You're as comfortable being the whole as you are being a jiva. Or even having a dream, you can have a dream where there are many people in the dream, you're not identified with any of them. Or you can have in the dream just a dream of scenery. It's not even any people in the dream. But you think that's a little weird? You're not even a person, you know? But it's not weird at all, because the personhood is the self. Not the dream objects, or not the waking stage, not the personhood, that what makes me me. It's not the body, it's not the mind, it's not the sense organs, or a combination of any of it. It's the conscious being itself. Right? And so, the personhood, that's why they call sometimes the Atma, or Brahman, the Purusha. Purusha means person. Who is the actual, the Purusha? And they have a whole sutta called Purusha Sutta, where they look at the person of this creation, because the person, what makes me me, is the Atma, it is the self. It's not the body that gives me the sense of me. It's not the body. It's not the sense organs. It's not the mind. It's me. It's the conscious being. That's what makes me feel like me. You'll think, person will think, I can be the Atma, okay, I could be the conscious being, okay, but I am this body-mind complex, and that's the I that I'm attached to. I know that the consciousness, the real consciousness, is the Atma and all of that, and that's infinite and Brahman and everything, but the one that makes me me is this body-mind complex, jiva. That's what gives me my sense of me. And what you discover is that, no, that isn't what gives you your sense of me. What gives you your sense of me is the self, the Atma. When you say, right now, say an Ajnani, say you don't have self-knowledge, and you say, you know, I am this person here. I am this body, mind, sense organs person. This is who I am, okay? So now when you're saying that, you're referring to your sense of self, and you're identifying your sense of self that makes you feel like you with this body, mind, sense organs, right? But what you discover is that, no, this sense of self that makes me me, if the body were to drop dead, and the sense organs and mind were to go, nothing would happen to me. Nothing would happen to the me that I think is me right now without knowledge. That's mm-hmm. That's what you discover. Mm-hmm. is that who the subject you, what you take, who you take to be you right now, yes, you've superimposed the body, mind, sense organs on it, but what you discover is that that you is Brahman. Is that you that is free, that's not subject to change. And in fact, that is your experience. When you're, even when you're watching, you know, you're saying, I'm having this thought or this feeling, the I, right? It's the me that is having it, the me that you take to be me. Right? And then when that feeling is gone, there's another feeling, then it is the me that you take to be me that is now having that experience. And that goes, and it's another one. But the me that you take to be me is the one that is always there. Right? And that one outlives every experience that you have. The me is always present and pervasive to every experience that you have. It never comes and goes. What we say is the whole universe, just like the dream comes into manifestation, is there, goes out, I remain the same. Like that, the whole universe comes into manifestation, remains, resolves, I remain the same. But what has to happen is that recognition that, oh, that one they're talking about is me. The me that I take to be me right now. And that this me that I take to be me right now is really not held by this physical body, mm-hmm. or mind or sense organs. And if you walk, you should just walk around continually noticing, oh, I'm still here, I'm still here. No matter what my experience is, this same me is here. And even when you are depressed or sorrowful or agitated, the whole negative spectrum, then notice if you're still here. The same you is still here. And then look at the positive, you go from the sukha-dukha, all of the, just the life experiences. You just keep noticing, am I here, present to this experience? And what you notice, what you'll notice is that, yes, in fact, I am completely present, always the same, and not covered by any of the experiences. I can get lost in the experiences because sorrow and hurt and all of these things, and I get just totally enmeshed in the samsara. But when you pull yourself out a little bit, here you are enmeshed having all of these experiences, then you just ask yourself, well, kind of an auto-suggestion now that you're going to ask yourself, am I still present? Am I here, present to this experience? This, the conscious me that is the same in all experiences. And you start realizing that, yeah, there is somebody home. I am present and I never change. And then as you start recognizing that, you start, that becomes in, you know, in the, that in the gestalt, that your own presence comes more and more, the recognition of your own presence becomes more and more to the foreground. And it's always in the foreground, in fact, but your mind isn't noticing it. But the more you notice, the more to the foreground it becomes, to where, like now, say if you're looking at this room through your sense organs, there's the perception of the room, whatever activity is going on, whatever might be going on in your mind, but you can bring your own, notice your own presence, the stability of your own presence, bring it to the foreground, and in fact the whole thought of the room, right, you are feeling it. See what I mean? Just, these are just things to notice, because you know, with Vedanta, it isn't some sort of a lecture. It's actually a methodology trying to make you see something about you, about your experience. So that's a whole teaching methodology to make you see this. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time. Because it's not doing its job. Right? Yeah. Well, do you know Swamiji? This one, Shri.
Kara did a yoga teacher training with me in 2003.
Oh, good, yeah.
So, and they do Introduction to Vedanta and teaching the Bhagavad Gita. So they're exposed, you know, they're exposed to that.
Yeah. Well, I just didn't know how much background you had. There's Tibbs hiding. So let's come back to him. Okay.
Something that inspired me that might be, that is a tangent, but is that the fruits of our actions in one realm don't relate to the fruits of the actions in another realm. And that's just great mind fodder for me right now. Right? It's like this idea of within the dream state, whatever that is and however many realms that includes, that every faction of that has its own axioms of merit, or its own axioms of the only way I know how to speak of it is increasing the love in each realm, or increasing the knowing of each realm and the relation. I just love that what I come back to in the waking state, or what I'm working on in this state, doesn't correlate to another state. So that, except for that, it's the one self kind of fixing all of existence, or like our.
Yeah, I think actually that is their point. Is the point that they're trying to make there is that the self is not taking on anything mm-hmm. in any state.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. And from the standpoint of the jiva transmigrating from world to world and world, there is kind of a karma follows you. You know, it causes you to take your next birth.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, as a jiva, the karma will follow you. But they're using here that like the waking state and the dream state and the deep sleep state to show that all the experiences you're having in the waking state, you're not taking over into the dream state.
Right?
Like eating and all of these type of things.
Mm-hmm.
Just to help you to differentiate the nature of yourself that's present in all three from that doership and enjoyership that is happening in the waking state and the dream state.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like more like on a physical level of not bringing the meals over, but like what about like lessons being passed from state to state?
Well, lessons can be passed from state to state, I suppose, like in this way that if you wake up from the dream state, and because I'm a psychologist, I do this all the time, yes, clients bring in their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You bring in the dream, and then we learn from the dream from the waking state,
mm-hmm.
right? But that's the waker now learning about the dream. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the waking state is not experiencing the dream state. The waker is not in the dream state. But the waker is looking back in terms of memory at the dream state and learning from it like
mm-hmm.
that. And then, of course, from the waking, the dream state, the waking experiences are the fodder for the dream state. That's all true. But if you look at it in just as in terms of states of experience, when the waking world is there, the dream world is not there. The one is negating the other. When the waking body is there, I'm identified with that, and the dream body is not there in terms of my experience. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they're just trying to use these three states of experience to help you to differentiate the one who's there, unencumbered in all three.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But on another level, like you can say, like Jung will say, the dream is actually going on, all the dream state is going on all of the time.
How
yeah?
so? What does he mean by that?
It means it's not present to the waking state. It's not present to the mind, but it's there in the subconscious. It's in the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Actively going on in the unconscious all the time. But that's neither here nor there for
mm-hmm.
the example. Because mm-hmm. with the examples, trying to take your life experiences and help you to differentiate the consciousness, the subject from the experience. You know, so I mean, for us, it doesn't matter if the what's going on, all kinds of things are going on in the unconscious. But when the unconscious becomes conscious, the unconscious is material, it's thoughts, right? They come into manifestation. All we're really interested in is differentiating the nature of me from these thoughts that are coming into manifestation.
So these three things, they just kind of highlight it more. I mean, you can just...
They highlight it more.
You can see that just in the waking state itself.
Yes.
But these just are kind of give that emphasis because they contrast so much to each other.
That's exactly right. And it's so obvious the way you can say, well, I've taken a different body in the dream state than I have in the waking state. So all of the things that you're so identified with as being you in the waking state are obviously negated and not points of identification for you in the dream state. And you have no problem with that. Right? That you have a totally different body, different world, and different body in the waking state, it's not a problem for you at all. But these experiences totally negate each other, and the deep sleep totally negates the other two. There is no problem with that, and your being is there present to all three experiences. So now you can even look at it like this. Just on the level of experience alone, you don't have to say, well, you can say the waking state is a more real experience than the dream state because the dream comes from within the waking state and all that. That's totally irrelevant to this. The question is, can you be without that experience? Mm-hmm. I'm not even talking about its existence or non-existence. I'm just saying, can you be without that experience? Is it possible? Can you still be there and not have that experience? If you can still be there and not have that experience, then that experience, whatever it is not intrinsic to you. Mm-hmm. Now, you can be without doership and enjoyership, like in deep sleep state. You can definitely be without that experience. The Atma is not a doer, it's not an enjoyer. You know, that's very, you know, you can be without the universe. You know? We're not used to thinking of myself as not a doer, not an enjoyer, not a seer, not a hearer. But that's why, one of the reasons why Nididhyasana, my meditation, can be so, so helpful. Because you can get into a meditative state and then you can ask yourself, am I doing anything? Am I thinking anything? Am I seeing anything? Just, you know, just posing these questions to the mind in terms of the mind's defining the self that's illumining the mind. And you will see, no, in fact, I'm not doing anything, I'm not knowing anything, I'm not seeing anything, you know, and all is well. And you know what, that's not a problem for me at all. I am totally whole and complete. So that's really wonderful to see that. When you see it right now, when you're awake, when your eyes are open and you're hearing. That in fact, you're just the simplicity of your being. You're just simply here.
That's very simple.
It's too simple. That's the problem. I said that to Swamiji once when I first got into in India. I said, this is all really simple, isn't it? And he laughed and he said, that's the problem. It's so simple that the mind has to unwind and unwind and unwind to be able to... Because I just got kind of a glimpse of how simple it was, not that I was really understanding. But I just saw that this is something really very, very simple. But then to understand that simplicity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, he laughed and said that. Because we're complicated. We have layers and layers of complexity.
Yeah, like from the orientation of the mind.
Yeah.
because it's very easy to understand sort of the self-experience, and especially with this waking dream and deep sleep. Like, yes, I'm dream having the experience of Ishvara and being Ishvara of a total manifestation that is going manifest and unmanifest without any seeming change to myself. And then I also have this experience of being completely comfortable with myself in deep sleep. So in the absence of anyone, like, I'm already having that experience, but as soon as I bring the mind in to kind of sort of probe that, there's a kind of panic that comes in, even though that's not my fundamental experience. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think that panic comes in, especially when you're first exposed to Vedanta, because the mind is so identified with the self that it kind of almost has a death experience. It's mm-hmm. afraid of mm-hmm. losing, afraid of dying. Mm-hmm. But of course, the mind never, knowledge doesn't change reality. You know, it just gives you knowledge of what always has been. So in the end, the mind is fine.
Well, the mind should just feel really relieved.
Relieved. Completely relieved. Because it's truth, the mind's truth is free. Is stable. But the truth of the mind, the Atma, you know. What makes the mind feel that it's a self, it realizes that that self is free.
I've always so much enjoyed that definition of freedom. It's just so beautiful.
Oh, let's call it a night. Enjoy. Oh.